Hogstein.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Hogsty. Happy, is there a holiday coming up? I feel like we've got to throw something in here.
Easter, you freaking,
Oh right, you guys have that thing. That thing that you guys celebrate. Happy Easter to all of you.
Yes, happy Easter, happy Good Friday.
Oh my God, Dave, what's wrong with your voice? Holy Christ, you sound terrible.
Dave texted us, hey, I can't do it, my voice is all messed up, and I honestly can't tell half the time, Dave. Until you're hacking up a lung like you did at one point, it's fine.
Well, funny story, though. Before I came on, because I was talking to my wife about all this, and I told her how I sent the message, told you my voice, so you could listen to it and everything. And, and she was like, your voice always reminded me of my brother, you had that kind of raspy voice. And then when you get sick, it just makes it worse. And I'm like, wait a sec. I'm like, hold on, time out. Let's back up here a minute. You mean to tell me you've always hated my voice for almost 30 years? Is this how it's always been? She's like, That's not what I said. I was like, well, hold on. Well, you said I've always had a raspy voice. Then when I get sick, it makes it worse. So then
I had a much more nefarious thought that compared to what you just said, Dave.
What's that?
Your wife said that you remind her of her brother. That's like some straight out of Arkansas stuff right there. See, it worked. I made you laugh and cough, and now his voice is shot. Success. Yeah. It took 30 seconds.
There we go.
By the way, of course, I'm muted. Mrs. David Earl, I apologize.
We've all been there. It's not fun. There are days where by the end of the show, I'm kind of doing this thing,
Yeah, right.
I'm not doing an impression of that New York DJ, the one who, or the sports guy who always does the gambling.
Yeah.
And just think, my whole motto this whole time was I've always had a voice for, I've always had a voice for a podcast, or a voice for radio or whatever, something like that. I have a voice for nothing. I got nothing. I'm just sitting here out here in the corner by myself, So, of course, I started signing to her so I wouldn't talk. So,
in all seriousness, you sound totally normal.
Yes.
For whatever that's worth. Not much,
Right. I'm going to just go DJ voice the whole time to sound as normal as possible.
See, what people don't know is that Alex already has an effect on his. Already has a microphone.
Oh, I do. I definitely do. Yes.
He really sounds like Tinkerbell in real life. You just don't know it.
Well, actually, I could give an advertising plug here because I took a vapor. It's a vapor steam. I screwed up the advertisement.
Did you do meth? Is that what you're trying to tell us?
No, I did not. No. It's a steam inhaler, Vic steam inhaler.
Oh, okay.
And I took that for 15 minutes before I came on, so it actually helped clear a lot of that up.
What are you doing? Freebasing Vicks.
Yeah, yes, I was going to say, are you just sucking on, steam or what? Is that what the thing is? Yeah.
It's a steam with a little Vicks pad that goes inside there. Trust me, it's fantastic. It helps you sleep at night whenever I get rolled.
Hey, man.
And you're like me, and you never get sick. You don't have to worry about stuff like this.
I'm not going to knock Vicks. My wife swears by it whenever she's sick. Right. So, yeah. Vicks is one of her go-tos. All right, so we got a little bit to talk about when it comes to the team. We could actually buffer a lot more if we wanted to, but let's focus in.
Okay, well, I got another concert coming up. Is anybody
interested? Okay. What's your new concert?
This is the Black Crowes next week.
Oh, the Black Crowes. Nice.
Remember?
Not bad. I remember them.
Yeah, their Black Crowes are really good. I mean, they are honest rock and roll, turn it up.
Mm-hmm.
No tracks, all loud. That, and the most important thing is loud. So that makes me happy.
Sure. Sure. Fun fact, they're almost as old as I am. I just double checked and they were founded the year after I was born. So they're an older band. I think of them as not as old of a band, but they are.
Well, they're not early 80s. And so you don't put them in with Motley Crue. They're late 80s, early 90s, really.
Well, they were founded in the early 80s. They didn't make it big until.
Yeah, but the Shake Your Money Maker was 89 or 90 or something.
Sure.
So. And they also went away because those brothers hate each other. They're like the Oasis of America. Mm-hmm. If you remember Oasis, those brothers can't even, they can't stand each other. They can't talk. They're like a stadium act in Europe and they can't get it together enough to get on stage together. That's the Black Crowes at a lower level.
Yeah. It's always amazing how often you see these like great bands where that just, it falls apart, and it doesn't fall apart a little. It gets really ugly.
Oh, the best example is Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd's one.
They're so Hall bad.
Paul and Oates don't like each other, right? Like they hate each other.
Paul and Oates is mad at each other too, but Pink Floyd is so mad they can't even get it together enough to sell their catalog. Mm-hmm. They were trying to sell. They got offers to sell their catalog and for like a half a billion dollars, and they couldn't even get it together enough to make half a billion dollars. And frankly, anybody supporting Roger Waters is supporting a virulent anti-Semite, and I refuse to support Roger Waters because of that. So. Yeah. But that's another show.
The other one that I didn't know how bad it was Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel. I didn't know how bad their falling out was. I just saw there's some documentary out about it, and Paul Simon got really open about it.
I think Paul Simon looks at Art Garfunkel as the really ugly, really big-haired, red-haired stepchild of the band. Like, so Paul Simon was the genius who wrote the songs. Art Garfunkel was along for the ride. That's what Hall & Oates, I can't remember which one. Hall & Oates is the same way. It's either Hall or Oates claims he's the genius behind it.
I think Hall's the one who says he's the genius.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. My, for the record, the one who says he's the genius is usually not the genius.
Probably, yeah, right.
you know, like, it's that old, you don't ever say you're cool if you're cool kind of.
Well, it's Ozzy Osbourne is an example of this.
Right.
You know, Ozzy actually has songwriting credits on like every song, but actually didn't write any of them.
Right, exactly.
He's just got like an evil witch of a wife.
Yes. He's the Ben Affleck of that thing. Ben Affleck always got credit for everything. Matt Damon did the work.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so there are some things that have gone on the NFL world, and obviously the ownership meetings happened this week. Not in Arizona this time. They moved it to Orlando, which downgraded my opinion. Orlando sucks. Just my opinion.
Why does Orlando suck?
It's just boring. It's got Disney World. Like, if you're into the Disney World thing, I guess you might like it, but not my cup of tea.
I don't think a bunch of billionaires are going to Disney World.
No. I don't know. I mean, Josh Harris probably might like Disney World. I don't know.
I think little Danny probably would, because he could have gone on the It's a Small World ride all the time.
Yeah, it's about the only ride he could
hides
go on.
In the It's a Small World ride. That's the joke. He can't. Danny couldn't go on both the rides, Steve. He didn't measure up.
Never measured up.
Yeah. Even the teacups, too short.
Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones, you know, on the roller coaster at Universal, maybe together?
I could
see shorts and an Aerosmith t-shirt.
Yeah, kind of just like Jason Campbell and Chris Cooley when they went years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Great photos. Great memories with friends. Well, all right, so the ownership meetings happened. I want to touch on the big stuff that came out, which is NFL stuff with the rule changes. But there were interviews with Adam Peters. Josh Harris did a brief interview that was of interest. So the big thing, though, the NFL has made three major rule changes this year. There were some smaller ones that I can't even begin to understand. Like, hey, we got to rewrite this subsection of the rule book for some reason, you know, that kind of stuff. Steve will look that up over the weekend and read that with great interest.
I will.
Yes. The big ones, though, the new rule of challenges, which is a simple one to explain. Now, instead of you have to get two challenges right to get a third challenge, you get one challenge right, you get an extra challenge, total of three for challenging calls on the field. So that, I think this is kind of the NFL acquiescing a little bit to we screw up a lot, you know, or the refs are screwing up a lot. But they're not trying to admit it. That'd be my reading of it.
Well, it's also another thing, though, Alex. They are really concerned about game length because they think they lose audiences. I personally don't think like another 5 minutes makes a difference, but they do. And so that's really what it's about, is that it's less like they've already acknowledged there's problems. But I think it's more about they don't want to lengthen the game so much that their marketing gurus think it's too long. That's what it really is. And so, like, if you have like really stupid coaches out there who are going to like challenge everything, you can't have that. So that's hence the rationale of, with if you get one right, then you get another. That's the point or whatever. Is that what you said? You get one right and you get another.
Yeah. Yeah. It used to be you have to get two to get a third. Now you just got to get one to get a third.
Oh, OK. Well, there you go. But that's it. It's all about like we want to fix the problems, but we don't want to lengthen the game too much. Right. That's what it's about.
Right. Well, I think they don't want to fully admit how bad things have gotten with the refereeing is part of it, too, though. They haven't come out and said it was really bad last year. It was.
I actually think the best thing they could do is to make every single thing that happens on the field reviewable with no limitations at all. If it happens on the field during the game, it is reviewable. That's what I think would help the most.
Well, they should have it set up to where they should have a crew in New York, at least two players on every or two individuals in every single game, and where like throughout the entire game, when they see something to question, a call, whatever, they call down, stop the game, tell the rest make that change, and try to keep everything moving that way. And of course, you still have the challenge flags on the side, but if you want to have everything challenged, you got to have at least two people actively watching that game so they could just make a quick call in, hold the play, get the ref, and then make the change or whatever.
Well, Major League Baseball has a variant of that.
Yeah.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think that would be much better. And they make the challenges a big show and, the guy throw the red flag. And, I think have somebody watching, make the call, end story, move on. Yeah,
now, I think the NHL is probably the first to come up with that kind of concept because they've been doing that forever.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, yeah. They've been doing that for a long time, too. But, yeah, I know MLB does it. Football kind of is doing it now in the NFL. And the NBA has no rules anyway, so I don't think it would matter, I don't even know if it's really a sport. It's just anarchy. I do think that they are expanding what can be reviewed a little bit, but that's one of those like less major changes that they made.
That could be the best thing though if it happens and we have video, we can look at it.
Yeah. I'm with you. But the refs are not going to like it. We remember when they did allow them to challenge PI a couple of years ago, and they never overturned it, even when it was clear and obvious.
Why one person on the planet cares what the referees think.
Yeah. Well, no one does except for the referees.
But the NFL clearly does, and I don't understand that.
Yeah. I don't understand why they treat the refs so nicely, honestly. These refs are, you need to make us full time. No, we don't. And you're already getting paid a full time salary. Deal with it. You make a very good living to, referee one game a week.
Right.
It's absurd. They don't need to be full time employees and make more than $200,000, whatever they make. So I have no sympathy for refs. So.
Yeah, they make a very, very good living. People don't understand this. Yeah. They make a very, very good living for working 16 weekends a year.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think the top is in the 200 range now.
Yes.
The baseline is like 80 something. Or
that's for junior ones, junior ones.
Right, right. Like the guys moving the chains or whoever.
Yes.
Or is the chain game part
of it? For 80 grand, I'll do that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They make more than the average American. And they work a joke of a job.
Correct.
So, no sympathy.
With the occasional busted leg every now and then, that's all.
Yeah, that is true. That was a bad one last year.
Oh, it was awful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a part-time gig, though. So that was the first change. The other one, the hip drop tackle rule, that's going to be controversial. And I honestly just don't know how they're going to enforce it. It's going to be very hard to see how they enforce the no hip drop thing. I know, Dave, you seem to be more in favor of it than I am, this change.
When I see it and I see what they're showing for that hip drop tackle is kind of exactly what I've been kind of seeing happening more and more the last few years. And I've been kind of a little critical because we remember last year, there was an injury that occurred in a game against San Francisco with another team. I forget who they were playing against. and Greenlaw had come through and literally looked like he wrapped behind. He looked down to see where he was positioned and took all his weight off and dropped straight down. That's kind of one example of it. But see, what I see most often is that when they come up behind and they go to tackle, they swing both their feet up in the air. They sweep it up so their weight goes with the momentum of the player, and they drop straight down at the same time, and it comes in their back legs all the time. And someone has shared a video of Ray Lewis back in the day when he would tackle from behind. It was perfect form of what he would do. It would be various different ways. He would come in, he would wrap up behind, then he would twist around, and he'd roll you around. And literally, he'd end up pulling you back a yard. And then it wouldn't be like throwing you down, but then he'd whipping you back around. It's just, there are ways from tackling from behind. Just what I personally see is that I'm literally seeing these guys grab them and then just kind of time it where they kick both their feet up so everything drops down on their back feet. That's just what I see. And that's something that's been actually annoying me for the last couple of years when I've seen it, because I've seen players get hurt often because of that.
I get it, sort of, but I don't understand it at all. It's football. Stop whining. You know, you're playing a violent sport. And I think what the people are really trying to do is, you said it there, I think Ray Lewis isn't trying to hurt him, and he's not trying to make a big showy tackle. What he's trying to do is yank him backwards. Yes. And that's when he's grabbing him and trying to spin. It's to get, you know, keep him from gaining yardage. And I think that's perfectly fair and totally legitimate. And if you get hurt, you get hurt. It's football. You know, don't play. So I disagree with the change that the NFL's made.
I just think it's going to be too subjective on enforcement. Like, if your horse collar's easy, right? Like, we can all see a horse collar. And we, right. It's not a judgment call. I feel like this is going to be too much of a judgment call. Just like the whole, oh, he fell with his weight on the quarterback kind of thing. Like,
the NFL had a video of what they deemed to be inappropriate tackles, and I had to watch it a couple times, honestly, to figure it out.
Yeah,
really. You know, okay, what is this? What is the difference between this and just, you know, running up to a guy and trying to tackle him from behind? And the answer is what you said, which is kind of spinning him around. But again, I think you're trying to save yardage like that, and that ought to be allowed. Otherwise, you're just going to give up another 2-3 yards when the guy falls down.
Well, see, I saw that video, and it was, again, the NFL doing a very poor job getting their message across, because all they showed was the version of the hip jock tackle that they want to ban. What they should have done was mixed in what they want to ban and the other type of tackles that they're going to be looking for you to make. Because trust me, I've seen other tackles from behind that just doesn't look as egregious as that in my own personal view of it and everything. I mean, if nothing else, probably a perfect meeting would be is that when you come from behind, you get that tackle, and a player comes up and he comes up lame with an ankle, then maybe you go through a review and see if maybe, okay, well, did he literally take his feet and put all his body weight down, or did he make a legitimate tackle, not trying to hurt him? I mean, maybe you could do something like that. You could tell that in slow-mo kind of, I guess, but. You know, I mean,
I would actually be, even though, you know, I tend to be it's football, injuries happen, like you, Steve.
Sure.
I would be way more okay if it's like, this is we reserve it for if a guy gets hurt type situation, this penalty. I could understand that a little more.
I guess. I mean,
yeah,
I don't love it. No, I think it's going to be abused by the refs. They're going to get it wrong. They're going to call stuff that nobody understands, and it's going to vary by crew. It's just another subjective call. I mean, the horse collar tackle
always work out in Kansas City's favor. It's another one of those things.
Well, the horse collar example is a great example. Clearly identifiable face mask, clearly identifiable. I don't know if the twisting hip drop tackle is very completely identifiable. It is an extreme example, but maybe not in the regular.
If there's one thing that annoys me with it, is the fact that you see these corners and these safeties come up on these larger running backs and so forth, and or tight ends, and they take a dive right at their knees or below to tackle them because they don't want to square up on them. And the only rule that I know of that it outlaws anything below the knees is against the quarterback in the pocket. So you're seeing these corners coming in and trying to sweep them at the – I mean, you saw Gronk years ago get hurt by it. I mean, you saw – I think it was last year, TJ Hockenson, he got hurt by the same thing. And they're taking it that because they're making a business decision because they don't want to square up. I'm sorry, but you play the game. Play
maybe
the game.
Maybe they can't square up, though. Maybe that's the most efficient way for them to take down the runner.
I mean,
runner.
Look, there's a 80-pound difference in a lot of these hits you're talking about.
I get that.
Yeah,
I get that. Well, that's where if you get through and you do a form tackle properly, you can at least slow them up and have someone come and clean up and behind you. But you don't risk a guy's career and just diving at their knees, though, either.
Well, and I mean, obviously, we'll talk about the third thing, which the kickoff rule change, which, as you know, I have been advocating for a long time. In my list of, well, there's other things that need to change. Rule one that I would change, make guys wear knee pads again. There's a lot of leg injuries that are happening because the NFL's let guys basically get rid of knee pads. And
thigh pads, yep.
And thigh pads are there, but they're smaller. But the knee pads are gone completely in the league. And
the sprinters wouldn't want that, though.
Tough. You know what you won't want more? Being in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. Having to use a cane at 30. Like, wear a knee pad. We invented safety gear for a reason in this game. So, like, that would be my...
I just think it's football, you know.
It is football, and yes, you will get hurt. I understand that, too. But, all right, so let's talk about the last change. And this is going to be the biggest change that's going to take a lot of time for some folks to get used to, I'm sure. That is that in order to save the kickoff, they're changing the rules. They're going with the much better, the superior in every way XFL kickoff rules that were created in 2000 and used by the XFL last year. Ironically, now that the XFL merged with the UFL, Daryl Johnson forced them to get rid of this in the minors, and the NFL is going to it because they looked at it and said, it's more fun, it's safer, and kickoffs matter again. Let's do that.
Well, but before you go into this, why don't you describe to people what the rule is?
Okay, so the way these rules work, the kicker is standing alone at his 35 in, I believe, the NFL's. He kicks the ball off. It has to land within in their space between the 20 and the end zone and be returned. The offense and defense, the remaining players are all lined up 5 yards apart. In the NFL, I think they moved it to the 35 and the 30-yard line that they're lined up on. They can't move until the kick returner catches the ball, and then it's a normal kickoff from there. The idea is you're shortening the distance between the offensive defense. Not as many. You won't have high-speed collisions. You won't be able to form wedges anymore. But it's, you know, hat on a hat, go after the guy trying to return the ball again.
But I think you missed a part. Also, I believe the touchbacks are out to the 40 or 35 or
35
something.
35
now,
right?
No, I thought they moved it. I thought they changed it to the 30 now instead of 35.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. It's 35 in the XFL rules, and the NFL, they moved it up to the 30. So it's a touchback, it's all the way up to the 30, so you don't want to kick the ball into the end zone.
So, yeah, the incentive then is to put the ball in play, basically. I don't like it. I mean, it's changing for no reason, I think. I thought there was nothing wrong with the prior kickoff. You know, let's keep kicking it off like you used to years ago.
Well, the problem is that they already changed it to the point where they only had, 10% of kicks returned at this point?
I get it, but go back to the way it was in the first place. That was exciting. There's not going to be kickoff returns for touchdowns.
Personally,
now.
Yeah. I mean, there's going to be.
We all know the likelihood of them going back to the way it was the same way as them going back to the name Redskins. You know, it was zero.
Yeah.
So they had to do something to get rid of what was currently in place, which was just absolutely horrible.
Right.
This at least gives some excitement back to the kickoff again. You're going to get returns. You're going to have a role for these guys now, and you're going to have a little more excitement out there. I mean, at least we got that back. Semblance of that back.
It's better than what it was, but I last year, but I don't think it solves. I don't think it brings back to the excitement of the real kickoff. That's
Look, I think the adrenaline you got from seeing a true kick return back in the 80s right. and 90s with B. Mitch and all those guys, that's
Dante Hall and all them. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, those were a lot of fun. I'm not going to debate that. I understand their safety concerns. But at the same time, it is football, like we've said. The odds of you getting hurt on a kick were still lower than a lot of other spots in the game. It was just an easy one for them to target when they were going through this whole safety kick thing that the NFL was going through, to cover up for CTE. But
yeah. Now my question I would have about this is I haven't figured it out yet. Maybe, Alex, I don't know how an offsides kick would work in this circumstance.
Okay. So the way
onside.
Yeah. The way they're doing the rules here in the NFL is you can only do an onside kick in the final 2 minutes of this first half or of in the fourth quarter. And it's a traditional onside kick.
Some other time for strategy reasons.
Oh. Yeah, that's kind of gone, which I agree sucks. I believe the XFL tried to do the whole no more onside kicks. It's now 4th and 15 and you have to get the first down was their idea from your own.
Yeah.
So if you're on your 35, you got to get it to the 50 to, retain possession. But it's a normal play, which I prefer that. I honestly, the onside kick is such low odds. At this point,
it's a shot. You got a shot. And again, sometimes we've all seen teams do onside kicks to start the game for no reason, just to throw them off. And that's just gone. They're eliminating a good part of the game, I think.
I do agree with you there. I think that's a part that needs to be tweaked quite a bit.
They really need to put me in charge of the rules.
Yeah, I think that once people get used to this, they'll like it.
In 1940s and here you go, rules.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. Somebody understands me. One person here does.
Yeah. Go back to, here's our game plan. We're going to break a leg and of their best player. And that's
attack.
How we'll win.
Yes. Yeah. Attack. Literally attack.
Yes. By the way, for those who don't know, that was the Bears' official strategy when they played the Redskins in 1937 was their plan was to try and break Sammy Baugh's leg.
The famous
that was their only defensive plan.
I believe that was the famous 70-0 game you're talking about.
No. This was the one the Redskins won in 14-7.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah.
Yes. I saw an interview with Baugh saying after the fact that was what was going on. Every time he got tackled, somebody was trying to twist his ankle.
And is that so wrong, really?
I mean, it was before the war, for crying out loud.
Yeah. It's back when men were men.
Yeah. It's also back when all the guys were.
I could see Steve as a coach back then, a guy coming off, oh man, I think I broke my leg. Was it a clean breakthrough or was it still attached to some to some degree? Get back on the field.
Are you gonna whine about it or are you gonna play football?
Yeah, just wrap it up, get back out there. Come on.
Ronnie Lott style. Just take it off and let's keep going.
Lop the finger off and be done.
Yeah. Yeah. That to me is the most gruesome story of all time. in football. The Ronnie Lott story.
Did he really lop off a tip of a finger, though? I mean, is that exaggerated? I don't know.
Supposedly, it was almost all already off.
It is a pretty extreme example, I gotta say. You gotta give him props, though, for doing that, if he really did it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so those were the big rule changes. There's nothing else, I think, that came out from the owners' meeting that was crazy in terms of, that overarching NFL landscape. The coaches do their photo. Andy Reid wears a Hawaiian shirt. Everyone says, hey, he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt again. Yay. And then they all move on. That's how these meetings go. Josh Harris did do a brief interview I saw with J.P. Finley. Mostly talked about stadium stuff. They're putting $80 million into improving the stadium. He was not happy with that grade the players gave him. Steve, you remember the players analysis?
Yeah,
interview?
We went over that. Chris and I went over it on It's Just Business.
Yeah, yeah, he was not happy. Josh,
but what Alex was talking about is the NFLPA surveyed the players and released the results. And some of they did it last year, and then this year they expanded it to include grades on the coaches and stuff. And and the owners, and Josh Harris got like a middle of the road grade. I forget
what a B or B minus or something.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
It was in the B range. I know that.
Yeah. Like middle of the pack kind
right.
of.
Right. Yeah. Ron Rivera was the second lowest graded coach, if I recall, in that thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't see why.
Yeah.
You don't understand that at all, do you?
Right.
Not at all.
But the team's facilities got what an F minus, because Josh Harris's quote from this interview was, "I'm not an F minus kind of guy."
You are now, dude. Congratulations.
Well, he's trying to fix it at least. You know, $80 million should hopefully get you up to a D.
That $89 million though. I saw something come across. I meant to share it with you. I haven't seen it since. I don't even know how valid it is. And apparently that they're getting that as a loan from the league to pay for renovations.
The league does this a lot. So the league has financing to do that. And so they will loan teams capital for stuff like that. It's not a grant. Okay. It's a loan.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the league also looked at those grades and said we need to probably be proactive so that the next player negotiations and union negotiations don't go totally sideways. That'd be my guess.
Well, yeah, but the real reason is that they don't want these teams over leveraged. Sure. You don't want third party lenders having a ton of liens on stuff, and so that's why they have an incentive to keep the financing in house. So if it goes horribly wrong, they're in more control than they would be if there's another $100 million out there in front, you know, in the name of whatever bank it is, you know.
Yeah, especially if it's some foreign bank in Russia or, you know.
Or like private equity or something. Right. Yeah, they don't want that.
No. Someone who will strip it for its parts kind of thing.
Yes.
Don't want that. I mean, I would for the merch, you know, but, you know, that's just because I'm a weird merch guy.
So what is this $80 million supposed to be for? $89 million? What specifically is it supposed to be for?
It's a lot of upgrade of just the stadium. Remember the controversy about the cold showers? It's going to, like, fix that kind of stuff. It's going to make Dave's seats nicer when Dave gets there. you know, that's going to be the big thing.
Are they going to start with the leaky leaky sewage pipe?
I think that's in there. I think like they said, a lot of it's going to be stuff you don't notice as fans, but they are upgrading some of the suites and things like that too. It's not completely about the players, obviously. I remember seeing some mock-ups that they did of some, like, super suites, you know, like the your dream suite type thing, whatever that is, where it's like,
what that would cost in $2,024.
I don't know.
A lot.
Probably more than you or I are ever going to be willing to put up for a one-day game at a game. You know?
Oh, that is 100% guaranteed. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I'm not putting up like a grand for a seat. And I know there's seats that are way more than that per game now.
I have always said there is no form of 2 to 3 hour entertainment that is worth more than a couple $100 to me.
To you.
I've always said if Jimi Hendrix came back from the dead to play one night only in the House of Blues in Houston, Texas, and it was more than a couple $100, I would not go.
Now, what if Marilyn Monroe came back from the dead and it's a very different form of entertainment?
It does not matter. There's no 2 hour form of entertainment that is worth more than a couple $100.
And I actually agree with you. Well, then
my seats would be perfect for you.
Yes. Dave's seats are actually not unreasonable what he pays for them. They're high.
Plus, you get parking involved, free food.
Yeah.
You can make a choice for you. I mean, I'm totally fine with you doing it. I'm saying.
It's probably ideal for you though. To be honest, it's only costing me it was $280 some a seat.
That's teetering on the edge.
Yeah.
But that includes parking stuff too. So.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah. Of course, I'd have to fly to DC, but you know.
Right. I mean, you can drive. Aside.
Yeah. That ain't nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And Dave does have good seats. So, you know, like, I'll give Dave that. Like, that's actually kind of the ideal spot. you're in a corner, which is not ideal, but like that tier you're on, that's my ideal spot for watching football. People who sit like front row, I don't understand it. Like, you can't see enough of the action in my mind. You need to be a little high up.
The one point in all seriousness I like to point out with this, the fact that they're putting 80, what'd you say, 89 million in it?
That's the number. It's 80 to 89, something like that.
Tells me that the team is going to be at this stadium for several more years.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing they talked about. Yeah.
Well, what did he say? I didn't see this interview. What did he say specifically about stadium?
Well, he said they're in deep talks with Maryland. They're really pushing hard for RFK site if DC gets the land. There's been no news since the House voted to give the land back. Like, the Senate hasn't done anything, but it kind of sounds like Virginia's done. Like, he didn't really mention Virginia, which is interesting.
It is. That would be my first choice if I were them.
He said we're still looking at all three venues, but he really talked about Maryland and D.C. He didn't talk at all about Virginia. And you guys don't know this because you're not local, but the plan for a basketball stadium moving to Virginia just completely fell through today in D.C. Because Virginia can't get their act together on anything serious because it's not a serious state. It's a commonwealth. It's a fictional state.
Okay, are you just like an urban snob? Is that what it is, Alex?
Oh, no, I grew up in Virginia. I hate it with a fiery passion.
Why do you hate Virginia with a fiery passion?
Because I grew up there, and it was an awful, awful childhood.
Why was it awful, though?
It's the combination of entitled jerks and rednecks that I just couldn't stand.
If I had to pick one or the other, I'd pick the redneck.
Between the entitled jerk and the redneck? Sure, yeah. But it's a lot of both, and I don't like either.
In all seriousness, you want my political analysis of this, Virginia has a very high-profile conservative governor and then an all-liberal Democrat legislature. And so I think they have a hard time getting anything done.
I think their Senate's by one vote.
But my point is, Democrats control the entire legislature, and they have very conservative governor. They are at war, and I don't think they have the ability to get financing together. That would be my guess. If Virginia's falling apart, I'd say that's why.
I mean, the Virginia thing fell apart in part because of that, but there's always going to be this issue in Virginia where Richmond and Norfolk and Southern Virginia do not want to invest in projects like a stadium that only benefits Northern Virginia. It was true when the baseball stadium thing happened in the 90s. It was true when Jack Kent Cook tried to get his stadium built at the exact same spot. You're always going to have that rivalry between Northern and Southern Virginia.
Like the country song goes, the rich men north of Richmond.
Yeah. I don't know that song. But
neither one of you know this song.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Man, look it up. I know some, you know, red-blooded patriot types know what that song is. It was from last year.
Okay.
Why don't you sing it?
I do not sing. I can't sing a note.
Steve could find his guitar and probably play us.
I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. But he cannot sing it. I can't sing either, so I don't blame him. Virginia, I think, will always have those issues. Maryland is a much more, like, it's a small unified state in a lot of ways that, like, they get that kind of stuff done easier.
And by the way, for the record, so people don't think I'm making this up, the artist was named Oliver Anthony.
I didn't think you were making it up. That's a weird name for a country singer. That sounds more like
he's not a real country singer. See, the story of that song is he's like a local factory worker, plays bar band stuff on the weekends.
Okay.
Wrote this song that came across as like a plea of the working class, you know, to maintain tradition plea from the working class to maintain traditional family and American values. And so it was a big song for people on my side of the fence.
Gotcha.
What was the name of that song again?
Rich Men North of Richmond.
I have to listen to it. I think I have actually heard
it. You've probably heard it. You just didn't know.
I'm just horrible reciting names of songs I have heard from the past. That's all.
But back to football. Sorry for the
Yeah, it's fine. We go off topic pretty much constantly these days. It's fine. It's totally what we do. Yeah. Yeah, so the Harris did talk about that stuff with the stadium. I don't think there's any other news. The priority in this region was the whole basketball stadium. So I think now it's going to turn to the football stadium again, now that that's worked out. Adam Peters did a longer interview, about a 20-minute interview with all the media, the DC media. He had some interesting things about the, you know, roster, which I thought was... One of them pertains to your article, Steve. He talked a lot about Marcus Mariota. And one of the things he said that raised my eyebrow is that they seem very okay with letting Mariota play, even if they draft a quarterback over two, at two right now, letting a guy sit and develop if they think that's what's best for the quarterback.
I mean, I hope they do that. I don't know if I believe it, but I hope that they take that.
He said their philosophy is not to be rushed. They don't want to feel rushed on pushing a guy out too early, any of that stuff.
Let's be honest. I mean, it's a brand new regime all the way across the board. Ownership, coach, GM, everything. You can afford to scratch this year off, you know, and just say, you know what, we're going to just throw this one away, let this guy develop, get the rest of the roster built, especially the left tackle area.
Yeah.
You know, and just keep on getting everything built and ready to go for the following year for the new guy to come in and just hit the ground running. To me, it makes perfect sense to play that angle anyway, because they can't, there's nothing they can lose. The worst scenario is you put this guy out there and he's, one, not ready to play, two, the offensive line is similar to last year. And then it just, everything just becomes a catastrophic mess around him, and he loses confidence, becomes Sam Howell all over again.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I would throw in that I think this staff has less of a rope than they otherwise normally would on, quote, normal, in like, quote, normal teams, because this fan base is so beaten down and so abused over decades, one, and two, the fans were not happy with Josh Harris last year, just if you recall, this past season. And I mean, I think the rose has worn off a little bit. You know, little Danny's gone. The tiny tyrant is nowhere to be found. And things went south rapidly, you know, anyway, last year. So I don't think the fan base is going to tolerate seeing no improvement. And so while I totally agree that they should sit this kid, whoever this kid future is, be it Jane Daniels, Drake May, you know, whoever you're talking about.
Or J.J. McCarthy. I'm kidding.
Yeah. I think if they sit him too long, they're going to get a ton of pressure from the fans. They might not care about it, but I think they will.
I wonder, do you think that, and this is just me, my PR brain kind of going, would you be, if that's their call, would they be better off just saying publicly, hey guys, we're giving this kid time. Just put it out there in the presser. He's not going to play this year. We're going to suck this year because we want him to go out and win next year when we think we have a better team.
Well, I think the initial comment from Peters was kind of a primer for that anyway, because let's be honest, if let's say Chicago decides to balk on Caleb Williams and go either a tackle or do something or take one of these other two guys.
Right.
You know, now you're sitting there. If Chicago, for some ungodly reason, decides to pass on Caleb Williams, you bring Caleb Williams. There's no way you're not starting him day one anyway. You're going to put him right away because most people think that he's probably the most ready to jump in, you know, and to play and to play immediately. Maybe. So you wouldn't want to make that commitment now and say, well, we're going to just sit whoever we draft anyway. Because if you take Caleb Williams, especially being a hometown kid, you're probably going to throw him in right, or at least attempt to try to get him in right away week one. But almost anybody else, there's issues with other quarterbacks. You'd much rather see them sit for at least 6 weeks.
I generally think that it's okay for the team to set an expectation like that. Tell people up front, we are going to take this slow. We do not feel like this person necessarily has to start immediately. We do not want to rush him. this team in prior regimes has made this mistake in the past. They've blown multiple quarterback picks. We want this to work. We have a great veteran in camp, you know, here in Marcus Mariota. And so I do think that they would be wise to do that. And sure, I mean, if you have Caleb Williams, who's clearly the best, forget the weirdness aside, just on the field, the best. If you have a guy like
talent,
that,
yeah.
Yeah, right. So it's a bit situational, and you know, I think, but generally I agree, and I think they'd be okay. I think fans would be more okay with that.
And I remember think, Gibbs and I did think it to your point, oh, game. Sorry.
No, no.
And
sorry,
I think to you,
we, it's like we've never delay, done this man. Before.
There's a little delay, I feel like.
Oh, man. Sorry
now Dave's
about that.
Dying. Dave, take drink your water. Drink your water, Dave.
Yeah, sorry.
All right.
Better now?
Taking a sip.
Yeah, sorry about that. But I think to your point, though, Steve, what you said about with this organization constantly, they've ruined young quarterbacks. They saw what happened with Haskins. They saw how they allowed RG3 to get rushed back and mishandled all that. The fan base is still reminded of that. They still talk about that. So to your point on terms of letting the fan base know we're going to develop this kid and we're going to let this kid ride out at least half the season, maybe the whole year, we want everything to go right, that's going to be far more refreshing to most of these fans going, well, at least we get a franchise quarterback potentially and you're going to bring him in right. That's all we want. Yeah. And we'll get into the season next year when we start putting those expectations to a higher level. And I think that's exactly right on that part. And I think the fan base would follow suit with that.
Yeah, they're always going to have some dolts out there who don't want it. But they'd be the minority.
Yeah.
Right.
I, when I think back on past quarterbacks, you know, under the reign of terror, Joe Gibbs did this with Jason Campbell. He was very public and said, this guy's good, but he needs time. And I'm going to let Mark Brunell play in front of him for a year and, you know, let him. He used the word seasoning. That was I remember that very well. Joe Gibbs would say he needs more seasoning. Then Jay Gruden tried to do that with Dwayne Haskins, and Jay got fired for it because Dan Snyder didn't like that.
Well, Jay actually did the opposite and started him immediately and then benched him halfway through the season.
No, Jay didn't start. Case Keenum started for Jay for a couple games.
You were for Dwayne Haskins.
I think we'd have to go back. I'm pretty sure Case Keenum started that year. But
yeah, he did up. Because that was McLaurin's rookie year.
Yeah.
The same year he was drafted with Haskins. And that was a year with that like 75-yard bomb from Case Keenum to McLaurin against the Eagles. Yes, you're absolutely right. That was true.
Yeah, Case Keenum did start that year. I think he got pushed into Haskins earlier than he wanted is what happened.
Yes.
But
in fact, it was a Giants game. That first Giants game, I think, came in halfway through. I think it was. Right?
Yep. Yeah, I believe so. Steve and I are both looking up box scores right now.
Okay. I think it was the opening game of the year where we played Philadelphia, and Case Keenum had that.
They got their butts kicked every game.
Okay, so you guys are right. So he started week 9. In 2019, Haskins. I was thinking I had it wrong.
Yep, and Dave is dead on. It was the Giants game. Case Keenum went 6 for 11 for 37 yards. Then they brought in Haskins, who went 9 for 17 for 107. You know, 3 interceptions that first game.
The larger picture with Haskins, rest in peace, is that Jay Gruden ruined him, in my view, and then had zero patience with the kid at all.
Well,
and then when he was handed over to Ron Rivera did him no service.
Ron Rivera had even less patience with him.
Yeah.
I think your memory is kind of biasing what's happened because Jay Gruden had 5 games and then got fired that year. Like,
Jay clearly didn't want him.
No, he didn't.
That's what I'm saying. Didn't want him, didn't treat him well. I think the difference now is that you have the GM in place, you have the coach in place, they're going to draft the quarterback that they want.
Right.
You don't have a ridiculous owner who's going to force players on the football staff.
On an outgoing coach who's in his final year of his contract.
Yeah, they're in the first year of the contract, not the third or fourth or whatever, you know, it is. And so this is a wholly different situation. That's what I'm getting at. And if you take it slow, develop the kid, look at Jordan Love. How he sat, what, 2 years, a year and a half, you know, whatever it was?
3 years, I believe. Same with Aaron Rodgers. So, like, I mean, we've done this 100 times. The number of quarterbacks who sit and it benefits them is pretty high. You know, like, I think it'd be an exhausting study to do, but I'd be fascinated to see if someone broke down every quarterback.
Oh, don't tell him. Don't tempt me.
I'm not going to make you do it, Steve. You couldn't do it even if you tried.
Of course.
Challenge is issued.
I don't.
The challenge
do not,
is issued.
Do not. No.
I don't think you could do it either. I don't think you can do it either.
You all know I can do this.
Yeah.
Did you not read my injuries, my comprehensive injuries?
Yes, stuff? I did.
Oh yeah, we did. But that right there was easy compared to what we're asking for right now. That's why we would never ask for you to do it because you couldn't do that.
And of course, you guys aren't going to help me. You're just going to leave it to me to spend a month doing
Steve,
study.
You wouldn't accept help if we offered it.
That's true. I'm too good for that.
I'll edit for you.
Yeah, no thanks.
I'll double check your numbers.
There you go.
Yeah. So the only other thing I'll mention that Peter's talked about that I thought was interesting, he did kind of reiterate that even though their plan is to build through the draft, he was very candid. When they looked at the roster, they realized they needed to bring in all these guys that they're in free agency just to field a competitive team. So they really hate this roster. He didn't say it that way, but
he was definitely implied it.
Yeah.
But so to finish up the quarterback thing, because we do need to get to safeties. I don't think there's anything in Marcus Mariota's past that would suggest that he's going to all of a sudden morph into a franchise quarterback.
No.
You know, he had his moments here and there early in his career, but he hasn't improved or gotten better recently to the point where I think it will work. So he could come in and be a pro, but anybody who thinks Marcus Mariota is going to be the savior for 3 years, I think you are mistaken.
Yeah.
That's what I think. I mean, you know, the last time he started was 2022, started 13 games, got benched in week 14.
Didn't he leave the team? Like he was told to like not come back to practice at that point.
There was he didn't play again, at least. And then he hadn't started, you know, then he got benched with the Titans in 2019 in favor of mediocre Ryan Tannehill. So he's not going to come in here and wow anybody, I don't think.
Yeah.
No,
well, he had a couple good – I remember when he was with the Rams. Didn't he have a couple good plays with the Rams or something? Like, he had one good game, maybe it was.
He was never with the Rams.
Or, I'm sorry, Raiders, right?
Raiders.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually never started a game with the Raiders. He appeared in a couple games. He went 17 for 28 for 226 yards in 2020 and then had two pass attempts in 2021.
Okay, so he didn't do it as much.
I think he got hurt in 2000. I think it was an IR for 2010.
But he would be a placeholder. We all know that.
He's a placeholder. That's right. I don't want anybody to have any expectations other than that. He is a placeholder. He's a veteran backup placeholder.
He's a guy who can maybe get you close to 500 if you're lucky.
He's going to be pro, and he's not going to be a mess.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so let's move on. We do have to talk about safeties. I will briefly mention they did sign another interior lineman to this team, Michael Dieter, center from the Dolphins. He played center mostly, but I think he's kind of going to be like a multi-purpose dude here. Position flex. That's a dirty word now, isn't it?
I know, but hey, you can use it anyway.
Still no left tackle.
I know
tackle,
Steve likes it so much.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Oh, I will say, Peters did say they really like Cornelius Lucas.
In what way? Is he a nice guy? Nice family? In what way is he a
just
nice
saying.
It can't be that they like him at playing the starting left tackle position, because that'd be ridiculous. So it's got to be some other thing.
I think he was just talking to talk, if you know what I mean, with coaches.
If you use the word like, you got to specify, because you can't like him as a player. So it's got to be something else. That's
he said he was asked about the hole left tackle. He said, "I don't think it's as big of a hole," was what he said.
"I don't think you know what you're talking about, Josh Harris."
Adam Peters said that. Peters.
I don't think you know what you're talking about, Adam Peters.
Yeah. Well, I'm liking this Michael Dieter guy just because that photo I showed you guys of him with the cheeseburger and the milkshake. Yes. Like, this is my favorite player now that we've picked.
So is this man going to be competing for your affections with the kicker from Temple?
No, because, you know, I'm Temple tough. So we're not going to, you know,
you're Temple stray. Proud?
Yeah. Well, no, it's Temple tough is their slogan.
Oh, okay. Temple tough.
Yes, that's the like school little slogan they put on billboards and things like that. I'm sure Dave's seen it around.
I mean, a couple times. Yeah. Do you and Brandon McManus just chant that at home, sit around yes, and go Temple tough or what?
Yeah, in a circle, me and every other former Redskin / you know, Temple player, you know, which is not a big group.
Because you'd be small, so maybe do they hold you up and, like, you know, hoist you up like a trophy, maybe?
They do that with Brandon McManus because the other guys are all linemen, you know. Kennard Lang or whoever. It wasn't Kennard Lang. I can't remember the – yeah. Dave is having another little fit because that was just such a weird
– We've got – we've gone way off the rails now. This is where my mind works, people.
Yes. All right.
Soundbite. There's your soundbite. Alex the trophy.
I'm the trophy, yes. You know, they come for me, not the other way around, Steve. That's what you don't understand.
They come for you.
They come for the trophy.
Do you really want to go down that road?
No, we don't. All right.
I had a few choice words.
Let's talk safeties in the draft. Let's just totally change gears here.
Yeah, not we'll keep this great... show PG.
Yeah. Well, it's too late for that.
That's true.
Yeah. Not a great draft for the safety class overall.
No.
If you guys want to know, our buddy Nolan from Tampa, he wrote our safety preview. It is on our website. He went up yesterday. So yeah,
Tuesday.
You can go there to check that out if you like.
I meant to invite him to come and talk about it, but I forgot. So sorry, yeah, Nolan from Tampa.
We always forget to do that.
I know I did invite him the last one. He was busy. You just didn't know I invited him.
Yeah. Well, you usually mention it, but yeah. So looking at this safety class, it's not a great class for safeties, but Washington kind of already addressed this need, their biggest hole, by drafting or signing Jeremy Chinn to a 1-year deal. Right. The thing that, and I'll be honest, I haven't looked that closely at the whole class, but the thing that stood out to me by that signing is it tells me they are still thinking a strong safety who's going to be your in-the-box guy and having a free safety play over top. Because they were very clear when they signed Chinn that that's what they like about him, is that he's a in-the-box strong safety. So I don't think they're playing a lot of cover two. I think Adam Peters and Dan Quinn are thinking much more of the, you know, cover three, cover one kind of situations. So, you know, with that said, we can go through some of these safeties now. So looking at Tampa's prospects, he listed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Let me whip through this.
You want to rip through it? All right.
Okay. So the top three guys are Tyler Nubbin from Minnesota. He's clearly the number one guy, 6'2", 210 pounds, mm-hmm. another in the box safety, probably. Dadrian Taylor Demerson from Texas Tech, 5'11", 195, a lot faster, 4.41, 40. Here's your free safety. He's generally accepted as the number two guy in the class. Javon Bullard from Georgia, 5'11", 180. You know, here's your another probably free safety type. High football IQ player, according to Tampa. I'll take his word for it. Cole Bishop from Utah, 6'2", 209. Again, think size. Now, this guy's got it all. He's sub 4'5", 40, and he's 6'2". And so that's a good, from a physical standpoint, that's a good prospect. Katan Oladapo from Oregon State, 6'2", 219, a lot slower, 4'5", 8. You got to think in the box for that. Kalen Bullock from USC, 6'2", 190, sub 4'5", 40 also. known as the special teams guy. Jaden Hicks, Washington State, 6'3", 212. Now you're talking Sean Taylor's size, but a lot slower, 4'5", 940. Yeah. And so that's kind of the top several guys. There's more.
Bunch of them on there. Most of these guys are not day one picks. Like, I don't – the only one I've seen – Tampa listed Newman as a possible day one first round
pick. Like lower day one. Yeah, like a lower round one, round two guy. Yeah, there's not – like Sean Taylor's not in this draft.
Right. And another name I've seen on other sites is Cooper DeJean, who's a safety slash corner. Like, I think he plays more like in that corner slot role. Type safety.
Right.
He's another late first rounder on a lot of sites. So, like, it's not a deep group. But that doesn't mean you obviously – they obviously need, I think, one more safety on the roster just for depth sake. So, you know, like, some of these day three guys, if you really want to, like, look at Tampa's list – you might find some interesting ones. Bo Brady, the Maryland corner, you know, he might be a good backup box safety. He's a little smaller, but like this is, you need special teams guys who play safety. They're going to need depth at safety. So like, I expect one of these guys to kind of fall of Washington at some point.
Yeah. The last guy I would throw out there is Malik Mustafa, Wake Forest.
Blazer, yeah.
Yeah, runs a sub 4.4 40. Yeah. You know, so he's athletic freak in nature. Typically, when a guy is ranked really low like this but has elite measurables, he's usually not a very good football player.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you know, if he's a day three prospect, that doesn't mean you shouldn't necessarily take a flyer on a guy like that.
Kind of like that safety we drafted from Penn State years ago, the white dude. I can't remember his name all of a sudden.
Yes, him.
Yeah.
Troy Apke,
who just never got cut. Like, he was there 5 years in, and it was like, how's he still here? You know?
I think he had naked pictures of Dan Snyder. Yeah. That's why, yeah.
But Troy Apke was good at running downfield on kicks and punts and not hitting a guy.
He was just
he had to be good at running. He had to be good at running away. He had to be fast, right? Right, Steve?
Yes. Had to be fast.
Dave, you almost got away with one. You set him back up.
No, that's the point. I kind of beat him to the punch to that. I wanted to reel him in myself on that
one. I just like to let you feel like you matter sometimes.
Another, just looking at the raw measurables, James Williams out of Miami, Florida. That's another safety who could be interesting just because of the size. He's, you know, in that 230 range. You know, that's a big... big dude.
That's a big dude. Yeah, that's in definitely in the box.
Yeah,
that's linebacker in all practical reality.
Yeah, yeah. He's a small linebacker, big safety.
He's not even that small of a linebacker in by not, today's
these
standards.
Days. No, you're right. These days he's kind of mid linebacker. So that might be another guy to just look for, just for that weird kind of position flex thing that we don't like to talk about anymore.
Yep.
So don't expect them to draft a safety, I think, in the top 100 would be correct. My gut.
Yeah, I agree.
But that 150 range when they have picks there, I could
at
see
at that point, like anything's game. And if they one of these guys they like is there, they may take him.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think that kind of covers the safeties. Let's move on to, well, we don't really have any other topics.
That's it. We're out of topics both, so we can't really move on.
No, all right. So we'll move on with our days, because I don't know about you guys. I have some physical labor I got to do at work tomorrow, which is not fun. So
I'm too good for physical labor.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm too hoity-toity to do physical labor.
I'm a man of the people. I do physical labor. My job, AV, is a weird world where it's a mix between physical labor, mental, like doing like computer science, and then like schmoozing with people.
My job is arguing on the phone with people all day long.
Right. Right. Yes.
All I know is I might have a near rant to have on the pod, depending on the answer from my IT department, because we're updating our systems. We want to have everything where everything's uniform throughout. So you have less you can access to. You can't save too much on the desktop, and everything's supposed to be migrated into our user folders. Everything we have saved. Why utilize a thing called a OneNote? I use it exclusively for every aspect of my job. I have so much information saved on there. Mm-hmm. And I keep asking, when this migration happens, or this update happens, will my OneNote be saved? I cannot get a straight answer on anything.
I think you know the answer to that. I've asked,
and I think I know the answer, because I've already had I've seen somebody just for an Excel file didn't get saved over to his user folder, and then he lost entirely. I'm thinking, I'm going to lose my mind. I saved as much as I could in my email, what I could do, but I'm like, you know what?
You're already ranting, and this hasn't actually happened yet, so we'll wait in excitement for next week's rant.
It might be a couple weeks from now, but I might spend a whole show ranting about it.
Yeah.
You might ask me, Dave, what's your opinion on this player? Well, back to the IT guy I was dealing with.
Right.
Who knows?
Yeah. As a guy who's tangential to IT, I sympathize. Because, AV guys are the ones with charisma. IT guys have no ability to speak.
My IT guys hang around and flirt with the attractive women in the office.
Yeah. Yes, because compared to lawyers, IT guys have charisma.
Lawyers have no charisma. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
A lot of them. Yeah. All right, guys. That should cover it this week.
Me included, unfortunately.
We'll see you all next week after Easter, and y'all have a good one.
All right. Later.